Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people, hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. Today's hosts are me, Manuel.
Me, Fernando.
And me, Anna.
We all study journalism at Ukiah High School. Today our topic is white privilege. One of us is an American whose ancestors came from Europe. And two of us are Americans whose ancestors are indigenous to North America. One of us might be seen as white, and two of us might be seen as brown. We were all born in the United States. The term white privilege refers to the advantages of people with white skin experience in Western countries. The advantages include social, political, and economic benefits. These benefits are frequently unseen by most white-skinned people because they are so normalized in our society.
Author Peggy McIntosh describes whites in our country as having an invisible package of unearned assets. One of these assets is that white skin color does not work negatively in terms of how people perceive one's financial responsibility, public speaking skills, or job performance. People do not assume that white people get their job or educational status as a result of affirmative action programs. And white people are less likely to have a security personnel and police harass them, pull them over in a car, or follow them around a store. White people dominate important roles on television, movies, and in the print and internet media. When people study national heritage, the ascent of civilization, white people are shown to be responsible. We are currently concluding an astonishing 8 years where the United States had a non-white president. This has been an historical event. This is frequently described as signifying that America has become post-racial. If a black-skinned person can become the leader of our nation, then the dreams of civil rights have been achieved. Clearly, Obama's election is evidence of large steps toward racial equality in a country where civil rights legislation is only 50 years old.
In 1987, Peggy McIntosh wrote an essay, White Privilege, Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack. McIntosh describes white privilege as an invisible weightless knapsack of assurances, tools, maps, guides, code books, passports, visas, clothes, compass, emergency gear, and blank checks. She wrote, I was taught to see racism only in individual acts of meanness, not in invisible systems conferring dominance on my group. She listed 50 daily effects of white privilege. These include the ability to rent or purchase housing in any area she could afford. If she is pulled over by a traffic cop, it is not because of her color. And she can do well in a challenging situation and not be called a credit to her race. In preparing for the show, we were given an exercise called a privilege questionnaire. The purpose of this test is to allow participants to reflect on ways that race affords privilege to some and not to others. Here is a sample question. Add 3 points if in most cases when you ask to speak with a person in charge, you will be facing a person of your race. Add 1 if in most cases you will not be facing a person of your race. A survey like this was given to students in Beaverton, Oregon, resulting in some parents expressing outrage, saying that it was an indoctrinated program. The school defended the survey, saying it was a method of exploring social issues to gain empathy, understanding, and to build bridges. We will talk about some of these questions later.
One of the purposes of discussing white privilege is that most conversations about race focus solely on the disadvantages suffered by racial minorities. Therefore, the resultant advantages given to the dominant race are overlooked. For example, white people are spared injustice if people of color are commonly stopped by police without due cause. Becoming aware of the perks of being white in this culture can help to move toward a more honest, post-racial society. The recent presidential election has seen white supremacists and white nationalists present their ideology more publicly. Their goals of preserving and protecting the white race in the United States is a growing populist movement under the name alt-right or alternative right. The movement promotes limited government, low taxes, and strict law and order. They criticize multiculturalism and minority rights, which they consider political correctness. The leaders of these movements deny that racism is one of their core beliefs. However, the past actions and associations of some of the leaders suggest otherwise.
Separation is the core of racism. It is easy to fear what you don't understand, whether it is a foreign language or different customs. For some, racism is a power trip, a way to get even for one's own disadvantages. We tend to stereotype people of different colors, and we stereotype ourselves. Peggy McIntosh recently said, I believe, is that everybody has a combination of unearned advantage and unearned disadvantages in life. Whiteness is just one of the many variables that one can look at, starting with, for example, one's place of in the birth order, or your body type, or your athletic abilities, or your relationship to written and spoken words, or your parents' places of origin, or your religious or ethnic background. We're all put ahead and behind by the circumstances of our birth. We all have a combination of both, and it changes minute by minute depending on where we are, who we're seeing, or what we're required to do.
What we will discuss now are our thoughts about white privilege, how we are advantaged and disadvantaged by our race. Our goal in today's show is to explore how Americans of different races can better empathize with each other and build bridges in a society that may become more divided. Let's begin by each describing what we have learned by studying the concept of white privilege.
Now, I think just to start it off, we want to tell anyone who's listening out there, this is just our thoughts and ideas that we have. So this is not to, discriminate or, try to tell anyone that they're wrong. So, yeah.
So, one of the things that I noticed for white privilege is you can go back in time, and as long as you're a white male, you fit in. You can go back to the Civil War and you fit in, that no one looks at you different as if you don't belong. But say if you were a black man and you try and go back, or even a woman, you are kind of shown a different world. It is a different time, but still, it's so different. I mean, you just have so many, I don't know how to say it. It's just, you get pushed down, and we're so lucky with, like, time, and more time we learn to be more tolerating and become more respectful of one another. But with that being said, we still have an underlying message of racism in our country.
I think that racism and white privilege have to not only do with individual acts, but as an underlying network that we can't always see, because I don't think that a majority of white people understand what privileges they have. They may think that white privilege is definitely something that's there, but they've never experienced anything different, so they don't know what advantages they have over minorities.
I think, like, right off the bat, when you hear the words white privilege, it kind of separates everybody, right?
Yeah.
Like, you got everyone looking at each other different. So this type of person is saying, okay, so say this person is African-American. He's going to say, he might say, well, now, this guy is white. He has this, you know? And then now the white man can also say, well, you guys are this color, you know? It's all, like, just talking and kind of just seeing the differences. There's just a really quick separation between all of us.
Yeah, like, when you bring up separation, I think of power and how power is used to keep all of us separated. Because the people who we try to keep power away from the people who have less power. And the more power you have, people try and focus on getting more power. And the people who have less power also focus on trying to get more power. And it's all about power. It all circles around of who has the most power. They're just trying to be on top. So it's never anyone trying to come together and be level. Everyone's just trying to be better than the next person.
Yeah, it's... But the thing with power is if you don't know what other people are thinking or doing, and you're unsure of their motives and just who they are, then you don't know if they're trying to take away power from you. And like Fernando said, it's all about power, so people will do anything when they're scared, and they could not even realize it because they're just so driven in a really terrible way.
When it comes to power, you know, if a certain person has power, they get treated differently right off the bat. But when it comes to white privilege, you also do get treated differently, you know, by police or, you know, another group of authority. And I think that's a pretty bad thing because, you know, then you got other races or other people looking at you, and, you know, you might be getting judged if you're white or vice versa, you know, and that's what it shouldn't be about, you know. We should all just have the same exact thing. It shouldn't even be about a color. We should just, you know, we're all humans.
Pretty much in the end of the day, we are definitely all human. But some, I feel like sometimes white privilege isn't necessarily a privilege in the sense where there's a lot of the time where it was like white police officers shooting black, like males, teenagers, whatever it was. And it's, there was so much focus on the white man who had power over the teenager or the black person in general. And then that's all they label it on. That's all they focus on. They just focus on the fact that he was white. And they say it was a hate crime. And it could have been, possibly, but what they're not focusing on a lot of the time is they don't focus on black-on-black crime. As soon as it becomes that, everyone kind of turns away. Because for the longest time, that's all people were talking about. People were just talking about white cops shooting black kids, black people. No one ever talked about one of the bigger problems, how much gun violence there is on same races. All they were focusing on was the color. They weren't focusing on the problem.
Yeah, and white people, there's a lot of white people in power, in charge of media, and they stand in high social positions, so all they care about is when whites get involved. And it doesn't matter how, that's all they focus on in media. So when crimes are committed, they only care if it's white. And if it's white on white, even, it doesn't get as much attention because they don't want to portray themselves as the bad guys.
I was just going to say something a little personal, you know, as you can't see us, you know, listeners, but I'll say, you know, I'm a brown person, you know, and just from personal experience, you know, I've been kind of, say if I walk into a store and, you know, I want to just buy something, you kind of get looked at a little bit, you know? And it might not be because of a racial thing. Oh, it is a racial thing, you know, but, like, there's a lot of different reasons why we kind of look at each other, either in a bad way or a good way. So say if, you know, there's a lot of Mexican heritage people who are a part of, you know, some sort of gang, not everybody, but there's, you know, there's a big population of it. So say if one gangster kid, you know, and I'm not saying a bad thing, but say if he goes into a store with a buddy, they rob a beer, you know, they get out. Now, if I go in, I'm not a gang member, but I am, you know, same color as the guy who did that. You guys think, I would probably kind of be looked at differently. They would be more aware of where I'm at. They would try to, you know, follow me because, you know, that just happened. And that's the bad thing. It's like, it's not always just the white people who are, you know, judging us or, you know, it's ourselves, you know, putting a bad reputation for us. And then, you know, that can go on with the white privilege dressing without the fear of gang affiliation. You know, you have a little bit more freedom to dress how you want without being discriminated or judged. As of me, you know, I kind of got to wake up and say, oh, you know, will I be judged? I mean, I don't really care what people say, but, you know, you still got that in your mind. Like, you know, do I look a certain way that might give me a bad reputation?
No, you're going on the thing where our own races we kind of push ourselves to our own race to be racist. How we say Mexicans are like this. Because a lot of my family, a lot of Mexicans say, like, we're like racist against our own race. Mm-hmm. A lot of races are definitely racist against their own race. And even though there's Mexicans from Mexico, we are all, there's sub places, there's different states in Mexico. So just a little bit of difference, no matter where you're from, people are going to nitpick differences. Because you could be a white Mexican, like light skin, curly hair, or like green eyes, and you're still Mexican. But there's other Mexicans like with dark skin, black hair, dark brown eyes, and they are the ones as seen as Mexican completely, and no one questions it. And once they see a white Mexican, everyone's kind of confused a lot of the times. They don't believe that they're Mexican. And a lot of the times, us Mexicans kind of say stuff about that. Like, they have nicknames that over time have no negative meaning. But before, they had such a bad meaning. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't think of, do you know any? But...
Well, I'm actually glad you brought that up. Yeah. Like, the you know, just your skin color. Because it's not just white people who have, you know, white as in, you know, people of European or different heritage. It's just the skin color. You know, you can be, like Fernando said, Latino, you know, and your skin's a little bit brighter. You have more advantages. You know, you can get away with a little bit more things than, you know, someone who's not as a brighter tone.
Mm-hmm. And that just shows, like, how bad white privilege is, because it's almost not even about... They care less about race in a sense that wherever you're from, they just care more about how you look. Myself, I'm European, but I'm not completely European, but, I mean, no one cares because they just see me as a white. So it's all about appearance and how someone looks opposed to, you know, who they are.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys think music has a kind of a more, not...
Influence?
Not, yeah, influence. Not necessarily, you know, to blame, but like an influence to kind of like separate people. Or maybe, you know, some way just kind of just have a, put a bad reputation on somebody.
I mean, there's definitely time. Like, there is definitely music that does that. There's music where it's just reflecting what they're going through on a daily basis, where it's just them talking about what they go through every day, selling drugs, going through crimes, and then having police harass them because of the things that they're doing. Because some of the things that they're doing is bad, and you can't blame them for that, because there is a tendency where a certain race is doing something in a certain place, and you can't blame them for kind of thinking to themselves that, hey, a lot of the times it's this race doing that in this part of, like, a town or, like, a city. And it's a lot of their own race having to start making a good name for themselves instead of trying to hustle drugs, hustle guns, and trying to do all of this. They should try and do something for them. They should, like, go out and do something positive, and instead of having to get all into the negative.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, with music, they can get out of that. They're singing and they're rapping what they see on a daily basis. And with that, they're trying to get out.
Yeah, but that could also, you know, influence listeners to maybe say, oh, I want to have that lifestyle, you know, or...
Even though it's, like, bad.
Yeah, you know, just it sparks a flame in someone's head. Like, you know, maybe I can do it with... Maybe I can do that, too. And that's where we could probably even just talk about education. Like, you know, we should educate each other, maybe, you know, help each other. And just, you know, that's... What do you guys think on that? Like, do you think white people have more of an opportunity when it comes to education?
I mean, I feel like a lot of the times it has been given to white people that they're allowed to go to school. Because many years ago, it was just separate. Whites only school, blacks only school, and they didn't care about blacks. They didn't give them as much funding for the school. And a lot of the times they kind of just saw it as a waste. It's honestly, the government didn't care enough to put any money or put any attention into the schools. So the students stopped caring.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a matter of having the students start caring again when, I don't know.
I agree with Fernando. I'm part of a science club, and I know that my team is one of the few teams that have a majority of white members. There's a lot of different races, mainly people with Indian descent, and they all really, they care so much, and it's really amazing to see. They're so intelligent, and they put so much work and effort into it. And I just know so many people who are white who just don't care. They don't do work. And it's really sad to see that they could get more opportunity than the people who really put so much work and effort into education.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel. Like, I feel like sometimes I have to prove my intelligence to people just because the way I dress or the way I look, they believe that I am something else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
they feel just because I'm a certain shade of brown, they think that I can't talk right, or they think that I can't be in any AP classes. They think that just the way I look defines how smart I am.
Yeah, I can speak on that. Like, you know, my earlier years, you know, I'm in high school now, senior, but like my first 2 years in middle school, I was more of afraid to, you know, speak up or try to ask questions. You know, if I was confused about something, I was either quiet about the situation or I was that dude who was like trying to make a joke to, you know, not feel like, oh, everyone's probably getting it and I'm the only one who's not, mm-hmm. you know. But now I'm kind of learning more and I feel like, you know, I'm able to talk more and speak out.
So like I said, I don't think white privilege is always a privilege. What do you guys think about that?
I think that's pretty interesting idea that, because I mean, white privilege, I guess, isn't always white privilege. I think privilege doesn't always have to do with your skin tone. It kind of depends on where you live. Or, I mean, even just your gender or your sexuality, because I personally, being female, have felt really threatened by white males, and I know a lot of people have, but, you know, just being female, I've been threatened by, so it's not always like a skin tone thing.
Yeah, it's like gender, age, and where you live, how much money you have. It's just, people love nitpicking everything. They just love separating everybody. Mm-hmm. It's just so weird. Even if it's not like has a bad message or like it's like a negative way of looking at things, it's just a natural way of people separating each other from everybody else. Because people love being, I feel like people always try to be unique. And with that being said, they kind of take that message in a wrong way and separate everybody. Because mm-hmm. they think, oh, you're unique and you're different and you have a different culture than me, so I can't relate to you. Mm-hmm. And so when people feel like they can't relate to somebody else, they feel like some people get like upset and they think, I can't be like you, so I feel like you should just leave. So I feel a lot of people have that mm-hmm. mindset, and it shouldn't be that. I feel like everyone needs to come together and appreciate what they have and not look for differences in each other.
What's cool about, like, you know, this generation, especially, like, you see it more in the youth, you know, teenagers, even mm-hmm. little kids, we don't really, like, look at things as a racial thing. That's what's really cool about, you know, us. You know, we're way far ahead of that. You know, we're focused on other things. And, you know, as in, like, you know, the 50s and 60s, it was completely different, you know? Yeah, People had to fight for a lot more, you know? And, you know, thanks to those people who actually, you know, spoke up and helped change things.
Now, like, speaking of change, like, what do you think of, like, Black Lives Matter? Like, that's a huge change. That's, like, a group of people, like, standing together and trying to give a voice to something that's been mm-hmm. in America and having to be quiet their entire lives. And it's just a good group of them trying to get their rights back.
I think it's really important. And I really hate when people say, oh, but white lives matter too, or, you know, all lives matter. It's like, yeah, they do, but, you know, the whites aren't being singled out like black people are. And black people are campaigning because they want to, not because they need to, but because they kind of have to. Get a point across that, you know, they matter too. And that's really sad that they have to say that. So we shouldn't be saying that, oh no, you know, you guys are the bad guys because all lives matter, but all lives aren't being endangered.
I think it's great that, you know, there's that Black Lives Matter movement or whatever, you know, because it's everywhere. You know, you can see it everywhere. But I think, you know, from hearing both of you guys, you know, I'm not with that all lives matter or none of that, but I feel like there's a, you know, everyone has their struggles, you know, or, you know, their some sort of separation, especially, you know, me being Chicano, I see from what, you know, just from my community, not everybody, but just from where I'm at, my environment, I'm sorry. You know, we don't really speak up a lot of the times, you know. We're more quiet, and we're like the unspoken ones, I feel like. You know, there are people who have tried, you know, and they have done a lot of things. But, you know, especially in the Chicanos, maybe even Native Americans, but, you know, I'm not that educated on that. But I feel like just Chicanos, you know, or Mexican Americans, whatever you guys want to call it, you know, we don't even try as much, you know, because we can do a lot of change, too. We just got to try, because we, you know, we've been hurt a lot, too, as a culture.
All right, well, okay, now going from opposite of Black Lives Matter, it's like switching over to white supremacy, where people just think white is the superior race above all.
I think that's obviously a really dumb idea and way to think, because it all traces back to history, because whites were in power and they had money and they had resources. So think of a different racial group had all those resources, and then things would be completely different. Whites maybe would be a minority, and so it's just stupid to think that we're thinking that we're the best, because a lot of people who think that weren't even alive back when whites became the, you know,
superior
race.
Yeah, I think that's the privilege, you know, that they have. Especially think about just people when they were first settling into America, you know, those people who had money to buy territory. That's why, you know, they probably felt like they had that power and that they're the best. But really, if we, like Anna said, if other cultures or other people had those same, you know, privileges, it wouldn't be like that, you know? We would all be a little bit more calm.
What do you guys think keeps racism alive? Like, what do you think with white privilege and all of these, white supremacy, Black Lives Matter, what do you think keeps people from doing that, even though it's not getting them anywhere sometimes?
What keeps racism alive?
Yeah.
I would say, I mean, well, racism is kind of taught, you know, it's not like something that's just, you know, like,
born.
Yeah, you know, so it's kind of got to do on who's around you, you know? Or your interpretation, because they can be saying something that's not racist, but you look at it, it's like, oh, you know, it's a racist thing, and that sounds like it's right. So I think it just depends on, you know, who, your environment.
Yeah. I think that a lot of people, like the generations before us, if, like Minnie said earlier, our generation is really forward-thinking with race. They don't, you know, we're all really accepting of each other most of the time. So I think mainly who's keeping it alive are the people who were taught to think that way back in, like, the 40s and 50s.
So, like, it's, before, you know, that. Them.
So, yeah, so it's them still implicating their beliefs into us or into other people.
Now, okay, well, what do you think? What's one person that you think of when you, like, hear the word racism?
Trump.
That's the talk everywhere, you know, Trump, Trump this, Trump that. I mean, I'm not really, you know, into all that politics and, well, you know, maybe I'm not educated enough to speak on it, but I would just say maybe he's not that bad of a person. I don't know. You know, I'm not protecting him, but I'm also not saying he's a bad person or a good person, because I don't personally know him, so I feel like him doesn't really have an effect on me, although he might do some changes in the world that might affect either me in a certain way in the future, but I can't really say a lot on that, you know? But the whole wall situation that he wants to build, I don't think he'll really, you know, get there and
I feel like that's
reach
like,
that.
Yeah, I feel like that's almost kind of like a childish thought that I'm going to keep everybody out that I don't like and stay in my little circle. I'm going to just stay here and no one can bother me. If I don't like you, you can't be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's like, I feel like, because if you want to be the president of the United States, I feel it's just being able to accept everybody because you are the leader of a nation that has accepted so many immigrants, accepted so many cultures and religious freedom, where you, and then you as a president, as a leader, start undermining cultures and start undermining religions and start being the person who forces other people to be scared of others just to get power. That's where, I don't know, I feel like that's where our nation kind of takes a step back.
Yeah. I also think that, I mean, I don't know Trump. I don't necessarily, I don't believe what he believes, but I'm not a politics person, but I think what we can do is just not hate on each other for liking different politicians, because we're not going to get anywhere with that. That's not going to help us at all. It's not going to change anything. So what we really need to do is just push past the fact that we're different. And that's, again, what we need to do with racism. Like, that it all ties to us separating each other. So if, you know, if I don't like Trump and someone else does, we can't get in a riff about why we don't, just because we don't, because it's just more separation. So we really need to come together instead of pushing each other farther apart.
What do you guys think about the Trump rally that we had the other day at the high school?
I don't have too much information, but I seen a video. I think it was on Facebook or might have been Twitter. I don't know. I'm not really like that. But
is it the one where like they're yelling?
Yeah, you know, they just kept saying Donald Trump over and over. You know, F Donald Trump, F Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You know, they can do whatever they want. You know, if they're bored, they probably went. That's probably the reason they went. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just teenagers. They don't know a lot. As of, you know, adults, they got more experience. But I feel like it could have been handled better. You know, I don't think chanting that really did anything but make every teenager or all the youth look kind of bad now.
Yeah.
You know, it makes all kids look like, oh, they don't even know what they're talking about. They're just, you know, in the crowd. So I think it could have been way better, but, you know, we learned from it. I hope, especially the people that were there learned from it, that they didn't really do much.
Yeah, I think it also ties back into, like, you know, I guess a good idea to exercise your rights, but, I mean, it's not a good idea to do it in that way, because you're not going to change anything just by screaming F Donald Trump.
Well, I just want to, I'm kind of just waiting for, like, the actual mess up that he does in office, in Trump. Like, then I want to be able to say something. I don't want to be able to say something to judge a man who hasn't done anything yet.
Yeah.
Because you could say all you want, but until you actually do something, your actions speak louder than words. Your actions define who you are as a person. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think that's...
What about, like, how... I think... I mean, a lot of people say it's not just Trump, but, like, how they say immigrants take all of our jobs.
Yeah.
Do you think that's, like, really something they do?
I don't... Not necessarily. I never thought that they took jobs. They get jobs, yeah, but it's the jobs that no one wants. It's kind of, we have them, like a lot of Latinos, Mexicans, and just, we get the jobs that no one wants. They wake up at 5 in the morning, 4 in the morning, just to support their family, just to make enough money, just to be in America. Just to live in a world, in a country where they thought that you can do anything as long as you have the heart, soul, and will to do it. And with the years now, with this year, I just kind of see that the ideal is kind of being lost with racism in it. And we need a lot more of the heart and soul that the Latino culture has brought in America. Because it's... just a huge part of our culture is our hearts. It's the strength that we provide each other, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. What do you guys think?
Respect. No, yeah, I totally agree with you. And that can just go back to, you know, the white privilege. They have a lot more opportunities with different jobs, you know, you have way more, you have a bigger variety of jobs you can do. And, you know, you can go to different places without being looked at, you know. That's what yeah. I see.
I feel like some white people just don't want minorities to even succeed, so they don't give them the opportunity to have, you know, good paying jobs or just an easy route, so they don't give it to them. And
so, well, thinking of that, like, thing coming into the country and where you live, where, what do you guys think that plays in society? Because I know I live, like, way out in Hopland where there's pretty much no one. So the way I grew up with really not a lot of people around me, I just kind of grew up with myself and my family. So I'm really hardcore with family. And I know in the end I have my family to fall back on. And me, I was always kind of felt like an outsider because I lived in Hopland. And because I never actually lived, because I did go to Hopland school and had like friends, but I lived out farther in Hopland where I didn't have a lot of people to be with. And so I did a lot of like watching, like I watched a lot of like people and what they would do and what they would say. And I would kind of go home and think about it and question it.
Me, I've lived in the same neighborhood, like a little bit over 12 years. And, the environment there, there's a lot of elderly people, you know. There's more of it's a more calm place, you know. And so there's a couple times, there's a couple houses that just this year that I've been, you know, for sale or for rent or whatever. So there's new people moving in. I'm around my neighborhood, you know. I've lived there for years, you know. I grew up in the same spot, and I'm the one that's getting looked at differently, you know. And I kind of feel that, you know. I'm cruising my bike or whatever. I'm just walking down the street, going to the store, and there's been cases where, you know, the new neighbors or people just look at me and kind of stop, you know, and they're like, oh, who's that, you know? I don't say anything. I don't even act in a way that's like makes me look like a bad person. Mm-hmm. But it's maybe just my skin, or maybe because they're just new to the neighborhood and then they don't know who's who.
Yeah, I have lived in a lot of different places. I moved more than 10 times in my lifetime, and I'm only 14. So I've seen a lot of different neighborhoods. Somewhere are basically filled with white rich people. Somewhere I'm a minority. And so I've seen a lot of different behavior where I've lived. And I think that's given me a perspective that a lot of people don't have, because they haven't moved as many times as I have. But I can't really say anything on, you know, me being white. I can't say anything on, necessarily being that minority, but I haven't been treated necessarily any differently where I've lived each time.
So, I mean, another thing that I thought of was how in entertainment and in movies and in TV shows and how in just media and entertainment, we focus on a lot of Caucasian, is it protagonists for like the good guy? Or
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like we've had like a lot of main roles, protagonists played by white men, where they go save someone, they go save a village, they go save a woman from a bad guy who, and sometimes is like a different race. They could be like Russian, Asian, Latino, Cuban, whatever it is. It's just so weird to me how it's never where the good guys can be a different race other than in Rush Hour.
That's funny. Yeah. Even in like, we can even bring in Disney movies, you know, there's a lot of, yeah, all the princesses. Well, I know there's the,
recently, Moana.
You know, they're now they're kind of like, maybe, you know, oh, we should probably do more. But back then, you know, it was more just all, I don't know what you want to call them, but, like, you know, they were light-skinned characters. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we all want to be recognized. So, you know, you should give everybody a chance. And I feel like Chicanos are pretty good actors. Maybe because there's that stereotype of, oh, they're all liars. I don't know. But, you know, I'm a pretty good actor, and I've never took any classes or nothing. But maybe it's just from watching too much movies or just being a kid, you know, looking at different personalities, that makes you kind of different.
Yeah, I can agree with you. I feel like I'm a pretty good actor, too. Yeah, that's that was that.
That's it. You're, that's it.
There you go. That's it. Now, like, I mean, if you're looking for my information to like cast me in a movie, my name is Fernando Benito. I go to Ukiah High.
We're gonna open the phone lines now. Do you think that having a black president has shown that America is in a post-racial state?
Do you agree that white people in America have invisible advantages because of their color?
If you are white, have you experienced these advantages? If you are not white, or have you seen white privilege?
Has our discussion helped you to understand some of the differences various people experience in America?
Do you think that white people should feel guilty about their privileges?
Do you think that multiculturalism is a misguided attempt to promote equality?
What can you do in your life to make the world less racist, less separated?
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. Wow, what a show. I've got to say, I'm always impressed and encouraged with the youth of Mendocino County. Thank you for keeping my hope alive. I've got to say that, yes, definitely I am a white woman, and I have, in a rental situation, been privileged over, I know, at least one Hispanic couple in renting a place. So it is discouraging to those of us that are not racist and who don't appreciate this privilege, although I took advantage of it. So, you know, it's a tough one. I just want to say that in terms of the guilt question, I think, in my view, the collective guilt of European Americans, and this includes Italians and Spaniards and Portuguese, for what was done to the indigenous peoples, those who were here before Columbus sailed the oceans blue, by choice, is evident in the rampant depression and alcoholism and drug use in this country. When European Americans ask for forgiveness and those who have been enslaved by the system could forgive each other, we will all start to heal. And I do believe, and I thank you for saying this, that music and art are the beginning of the healing.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, caller.
Thank you so much for this show.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling in.
Caller, you're on air.
I've never called a radio show before.
It's all good.
I'm a 73-year-old white woman, and I live in Lake County. I love this show. I'm so grateful to hear young people really seriously talking about things. As a white woman, I have never in my life doubted my privilege. I knew it very young, I think. And it was not until I realized I was treated differently as a woman that I experienced discrimination. And then I was gay, and then I really experienced discrimination. And but in terms of being white, I've never doubted it. And I'm fairly poor. I still don't doubt it. So I know, I feel confident. I always have. If I wanted to get a job, I could if I was qualified. I lived in white neighborhoods, white towns for many, many, many years. And I remember coming to Lake County about 6 years ago, and I said to people here that I volunteered with, I'm so happy to be in a community where there's some racial diversity. And they looked at me like, well, where is it? You know? But I said, well, the Native Americans. And there are other people here, not a lot, but I'd say it's by and large a white community. I feel like a lot of the jobs, is this argument about people taking jobs is really specious. And I said to somebody recently, I said, well, are you prepared not to eat vegetables and fruits, meat, chicken, drink wine, beer? Because all those things are harvested by people, usually, of a different nationality.
Yep.
And a different color. And they just sort of looked at me, the people I said that to, like, oh, wow, okay. And anyway, that's about all I have to say, except I have never, ever, ever doubted it. And I learned early on that there were people in this country that at least the white people I was around felt free to make jokes about. And when I was growing up, it was Jewish people. It was black people. And then later on in life, I learned on a job that you could sum it up, and I won't use the words, but Jews, black people, and gay people in that order. And I heard that frequently. So I'm well aware of discrimination, although I can go out. I used to think, and I said it, I was so grateful I wasn't born black or a gay man, because they both, and I know other people suffer as well, but they've both taken so much anger and discrimination. And I guess that's all I have to say. Thank you for the program.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
I remember I was reading a book for my English class, and it was Native Son, and it had to do with a black boy and his family. And I remember after that, after reading it and the conversation that we had in class, Mr. McClanahan, English, shout out to Mr. McClanahan.
Again?
No. he told us that one thing that he did tell me, and I still remember, I will probably remember for like the rest of my life, is how an African-American man, father, has to have a talk with his children, and not necessarily like the talk, like birds and the bees.
Right.
Yeah, but the conversation that, because the way you look, you will be discriminated against. You will be judged just because the way that you look.
Yeah, and I think that's harsh because, you know, kid, like, you can't really get that in your head at first. You know, you're like, what is he talking about? Well, that's what I would say, you know, like, if.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, like, you don't, you can't, a kid won't understand that, you know? And that's what a kid, like, that's something that a kid should never see. And that's crazy. But that's why, like I said earlier, it's really cool how, you know, our generation is coming together more and, you know, not really caring. We're more, you know, we just, we're more combined, you know, we just all get along. But there still is a little bit of that, you know, that little, there's a little population of that.
Caller, you're on air.
Hi.
Hi.
I appreciate the show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate you calling.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make a comment about, you know, a condition that exists, and it's, I'm a 63-year-old white male. I've lived in Mendocino County. I was born here, raised here, and I want to make a comment about station management and ethnicity, and something that would never be permitted if station management were people of color running the station the way it's being run today. I don't want to get too far into the weeds on exactly what's being done, but you know, I've been seeing articles, I've been writing, you know, letters to the editor for some time now about station management, and there's just no way that people, whether they're Latinos or Native American or African American or, you know, whatever, would be allowed to run the station into the ground the way it's been done today, you know, if only white people could have done this.
That's a really good point.
You know, and I'm not whining, but I'm just saying it's a rare form of privilege that white people can do so much damage. And you don't have to, I don't want to expect you to comment, but I just, you know, since it's an open line, I just wanted to comment that only white people could have done what's been done to the station as it's been done today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for the show.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Caller, you're on air.
Hi, my name's Tim. I'm a 36-year-old white male and have a lot of opinions on the subject. I really appreciate the show and the vibe you guys have been holding with it. In thinking about white privilege, I got out the dictionary and I was like, what's privilege, you know? And a lot of the definitions, and I got the Oxford one, it's got all these definitions, and a lot of them have to do with, like, licenses and bills and certifications. It goes back to Rome. And so I think that, of course, ties into immigration and citizenship and all of the really complicated issues that come in around some of the issues afloat right now. But, you know, generally it also does just say a right, advantage, or immunity granted to a person, a body, or a class of persons. And, you know, I grew up on welfare and understand that racism is an institutional issue. And I think a lot of times, especially maybe with police, white people do see privileges that a lot of people of color don't. And then I think we also then forget that, you know, the 1%, the 99%, well, that means that, you know, most white people aren't really in the high class either and see a lot of the same institutional issues with being poor on debt and all those issues. And so, you know, I think the people of the country need to free up and love each other and realize that there's big institutional issues. And if we start fixing those, I think it would just go so far to fixing all of our interracial citizen issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But thank you guys. I just wanted to share that.
Thanks.
Thank you for calling.
All right. Yeah. Bye.
Caller, you're on there.
Yes, I'm a Caucasian male, mid, and anyway, I'm in my 50s. The reference to that guy is kind of ties in with the guy who's talking about station management and what I think really needs to be happening, because I grew up in suburbia down in on the peninsula, but fortunately I had a dad who grew up in North Georgia as poor white trash, who was treated poorly by everybody, not including the rich black people. And what he made sure was, A, he let me know that everyone's special, no one's more special than anybody else. And I think what a lot of this is going on is we need to realize it's a class thing. Being a white person, I was a deadhead for years. I was fair game for everybody, Chinese, African-American, Latinos, everybody. I was fair game for everybody and discriminated against repeatedly. So what we need to really look at is, unfortunately, because of what happened in the economy, economics of this country, the manifestation of the class problem is that there are a lot of Latino and African American people that are of the lower class. Because I will guarantee you that I have been discriminated against by black rich people, African American, whatever, rich people, Hispanic rich people, Chinese rich people, and white rich people. So when you start doing affinity, when you start starting to say, like, Black Lives Matter, what you do is you start isolating and eliminating. And when you start telling people, you have to accept me, but I don't have to accept you, then you've got a problem. So let's try to say and realize what it is. It's class warfare. And unfortunately, I had to pull over to the side of the road to comment, and some idiot's using his machine. But, you know, it's like, come on, people. When you start saying, I matter more than you, or I've suffered more than you, you start dividing people up, and that's what lost the election. Thanks. Have a good day.
You too. Thank you. Caller, you're on air.
Hello, thanks. So I just kind of wanted to say that I'm so tired of hearing about white privilege. I think if humanity wants to actually succeed together, we need to just be one, and we all realize we are one. And if we start talking about the 1% or the 5% or this race and that race, we're just dividing ourselves up. And if we're all sharing this consciousness together in individual forms, we're all one. It's all one big ball of energy that we're having our own individual experiences. And if we just keep talking about us and them, the left, the right, the Democrats, the Republicans, we're going to just keep continuing racism. We're going to keep continuing the divide. It's just, you know, at some point, humanity needs to come together as a one instead of us versus them. It's the rich people against the poor people. I guess I didn't hear the beginning part of your show, but I just kind of tuned in, and I've heard all these people talking about white privilege, and I'm just so tired of hearing about it. And kind of like that last caller said, if we're just going to keep doing this, we're going to be divided and there's going to be no unity. And this is kind of what the planet needs right now, is unity with all its people.
Thank you for calling.
No, yeah, I totally agree with that last caller. I don't know if he's still on air, but yeah, I think we're all kind of tired of, you know, hearing about white privilege, mm-hmm. but we're just talking about it. That's the only way we can kind of change it. But I get it, you know. Don't pay attention to my looks. Mm-hmm. Pay attention to my pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Your host today have been me, Anna.
Me, Manuel.
Me, Fernando.
We want to thank Matt Lefevre for assistance in organizing this show.
Lefevre.
Yeah.
Laytonville Healthy Start Coalition's Drug Free Communities Project is proud to support this month's Youth Speak Us Out. Our Environmental Prevention Strategies in this community, also known as EPIC, is a project funded by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Through our organization and coalition, we are working towards reducing youth substance abuse through a variety of strategies in the Laytonville community. If you are interested in learning more about our efforts, please contact Laytonville Healthy Start at 707-984-8089 or email Jama at jamashields@pacific.net. Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162.
Dan Roberts?
Willits, California, 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of a show, and listen to many hours of previous programs and streaming audio.
The views expressed on this program are the views of those who express them. Thanks for listening.